Welcome to Heritage Breeds, a podcast series that is brought to you by the Livestock Conservancy, an organization involved in protecting nearly 200 breeds of livestock and poultry. This series will introduce you to the animals, breeders, and people working to save them from extinction. Welcome, I'm C.S. Wurzberger, your host, and today we're talking about felting with Navajo Churro sheep's wool. First, I'd like to welcome farmer, artist, crafter, and felter Minna White. Not only does she own a farm that raises Navajo Churro sheep, she is the artist behind LanaDura.com, an amazing business that sells felted and handcrafted items from the sheep's wool. Now, LanaDura's felted bags began as an idea speck in the hearts of two shepherds who raise Navajo Churro sheep for more than 50 years combined. Their goal is to give the sheep a job and allow them to live long, productive lives, contributing to the sustainability and durability of their farm. The sheep are paid to produce a product annually by contributing their wool fiber. Now think about this for a moment. To guarantee a future for small farm agriculture, every farm animal needs to contribute to the bottom line. This is especially important with endangered and old-fashioned breeds. In promoting these heritage fiber breeds, it's Minna's intention to enhance partnerships with people working to ensure continued genetic diversity in the future for agriculture. Welcome, Minna. So glad you can join us today.
Hello, CS. It's a pleasure and an opportunity to speak with you today about Navajo Churro sheep.
Well, thank you. Now, before we get into felting and the amazing products you create, let's first tell folks more about the Navajo Churro sheep and their history.
Well, Navajo Churro sheep came from Spain originally in the 1500s with the conquistadors. So their historic home is the Iberian Peninsula, where they were called the Churra. And they do very well in the rugged, dry climates of the American Southwest. But they also are just fine in New England, in the Northwest, which is wet and cold, and it's their double-coated fleece that really allows them to be quite able to survive in very different climatic conditions.
Interesting. And now, can you share with us a little bit more about their personality? Are they quiet? Are they outgoing? Tell us more about your flock.
Churro sheep, they eat hay. They eat grass and they eat hay, and they will also browse on weeds, and they'll even eat the bark off a tree if they're hungry enough. And churros are relatively narrow-bodied sheep. They weigh, they weigh 100 to 120 pounds, and full-grown mature ram will weigh 150 and maybe as much as 200. But not usually. They flock very well, and like many of the historic old breeds, they retain a lot of their basic survival instincts. So the ewes will defend their babies, they'll stomp their feet at dogs or coyotes and try and scare them away, which of course doesn't usually work. But the ewes are very brave, and they're very good milkers. They flock together. They don't tend to sort of spread out and wander off. They're really very pleasant sheep to keep.
And now, how long do they carry their babies?
Well, sheep carry their babies for 5 months, approximately. And most Navajo Churro sheep will have a single baby their first time around, and then they'll twin, triplet, and I've even had quadruplets. Well, the sheep have had quadruplets. And so they make a lot of nutrition on just grass and hay. They really don't need grain. It's not that good for them. They like it. It's like candy to us.
And it's just amazing to hear how they start off with one lamb the first year, and then each year that you're breeding them, they can be increasing the numbers for you. I mean, They've got to have quite a bit of milk production to be able to support triplets and even quadruplets. That's quite amazing.
Yeah, they really do very well. And if you consider that their basic habitat is the Southwest, which is dry, it's high, it's arid, they have to walk a long way for a meal. They're a great sheep breed.
That's nice to hear. I know that when I've raised domestic breeds, oh my goodness, even when some of the ewes had twins, they didn't have enough milk. And I can't even remember how many lambs I have bottle raised because of that. So nice to know that this breed is far more hardier when it comes to raising all their young. Now, what about colors? I think I was reading that they come in a whole variety of colors. Is this true? Blues and browns and blacks and even spotted?
Yes, the churros are white, black, brown, spotted. They'll be patterned like a badger or a spotted sheep. And I bred a white ewe and a white ram together for 5 years in a row, the same two sheep. And every year, the ewe had different colored twins.
Oh, my goodness.
It's fun. There's a lot of genetic diversity in these old heritage breeds.
And that must really add to your creativity when it comes to felting and creating products from the wool when you've got so many different colors to work with.
It's really a pleasure, and I use only the natural colors, so it allows lots of patterns and creativity.
Nice. Now, I know in a few minutes we're going to be talking about how you're using the wool for the felting, but can the Navajo Churro sheep also be used for meat, or are they primarily a wool animal?
Well, like all historic breeds, the Navajo Churro was a general-purpose animal. They had to provide wool. They had to provide meat eventually. They had to be very good milkers because one sheep breed had to do it all. So like the other historic traditional heritage breeds, the Churro was traditionally used for everything.
Okay. And now I'd also like to mention that this breed's conservation status is considered threatened. This means that there are fewer than 1,000 Navajo Churro sheep in the United States, and estimated that there are less than 5,000 globally. So thank you, Minna, for your devotion. We are so grateful for farmers like you that are devoting your life to keeping this breed from going extinct. So on that note, I would love to know what inspired you to get involved with this particular breed.
Well, I was working in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I read an article about Navajo Churro sheep and how there were fewer than 700 that were known to exist in the world. And I thought about my little farm in Vermont, and I thought about the sheep that I had there, and I thought, I can raise Navajo Churros. I just have to find a couple. It took me an entire year to find somebody who would sell me a starter flock. And I ended up buying 4 ewes and 2 rams, a mature ewe and 3 lambs, and a mature ram, and then 3, and then 1 ram lamb. And I put them in the back of pickup truck and drove them to Vermont. And every 2 years or 3 years, I would drive out and get more breeding stock. And by then, I bought a trailer. And I brought them back to Vermont and kept breeding them and breeding them and breeding them.
That is just amazing. And luckily now with the Livestock Conservancy, they have their breeder directory. So it's a lot easier to be able to connect up with many of the farmers and breeders that are out there. But you're absolutely right. I've heard this story before, especially on the animals that are on the threatened list and definitely on the critical list, where the breeders are very protective and really researching who is buying the animals from them, because literally every single life matters when it comes to animals that are so severely and so critically endangered. But I'm so glad that the breeder actually set you up with your breeding stock and you've been able to roll forward with this. Now, I've seen so many of the incredible felted bags that you've created. Can you tell us more about felting and the process that you go through when creating this felt?
Well, felt is a very, very old way of making textiles. It's thousands of years old. The Mongolians did it. It's essentially what I do is I wash the wool when it comes off the sheep, and then I card it, which combs the little fibers so they line parallel. Then I arrange the different patterns using different colors of wool, and then I cover it all with hot water, and I press it. And one could make felt by rolling it around like anything round and just rolling it back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And essentially I press it for about 2 hours. And all the little fibers sort of snarl together and they shrink. And by the time I'm done felting, it's not going to come apart, and it is gone from being a whole bunch of little separate wool fibers to being a piece of cloth.
So now I'm thinking about the videos that you had sent over to me. And I know right now this is an audio podcast, so our viewers aren't able to see that. But I know you've got links to some of them on your website. Plus, I'll make sure we connect folks up with the links to this process. And as you know, Heritage Breeds is going to be kicking off a video podcast within the next 2 weeks, and we'll definitely make sure that we do a whole video podcast just to showcase how you do this felting process, because listeners, it is so amazing to watch Minna at work. So just to describe to the folks that aren't realizing this, how big are these felted sheets that you are creating, your starting point here?
The usual size that I make is about 3 feet by 4 feet. And one piece of felt will weigh about a pound or a pound and a quarter. So really, it's quite light, but quite strong. And people use it for floor rugs. I cut and sew with it. Pets love it for beds. There is lots of things you can do with it. And, you know, it's light. It's amazingly strong.
And that's amazing, because I had seen these big 3-foot sheets that you were hanging out to dry on your front porch out on the line. I can't believe they only weigh around a pound. I mean, the viewers are going to be so amazing when they see that. So that's a good lead-in. So now you've got these sheets of felt. So now you're actually cutting those out as if they were traditional fabric and then turning those into the different bags that you create?
Yes, so I cut and sew them and make tote bags. I make lined zipper bag that holds a tablet. The tote bags are lined, so they're very strong. So I make different things, and other people could too. They could buy the large sheets and create.
Well, and you just said something interesting when you said that you create a bag for a tablet. When you say tablet, you mean a handheld device like an iPod or a Kindle or an iPad, something along those lines?
Yes, I make a small one that holds a Kindle and a larger one that holds an iPad. And because they're I line them with Cordura, they're very strong, and yet the wool felt is on the outside, so they're cushioned and they're padded against sort of knocking around.
Well, and I was just kind of smiling to myself and thinking, wouldn't it be amazing if our ancestors could come back in time and see their traditional process of felting now also being used for this modern technology and computers and tablets that we have in today's society. It's just pretty amazing the way history just continues to grow forward.
Well, in order to give sheep a job and have them keep participating and contributing to the farm's upkeep, you've got to keep up with technology.
That is a perfect point. And on that note, are there any other products that you love making or people love buying that you'd love to feature at this point?
I make placemats, and the pet beds are really successful. I've been making a meditation cushion that people could sew at home. There's so much you can do with felt, and if you look historically, people made slippers. I make slippers out of them. There's just felt is so flexible and creative.
Well, and I love the way you said it. The more people use this felt, the more we can continue to give these sheep a job, and it will also help to grow back the numbers of the Navajo Churro, so we can hopefully, within our lifetime, move them up the conservation priority list so they're not as severely endangered as they are now. So now share with us, what is one of the greatest challenges you have faced being a farmer?
I think probably the greatest challenge that farmers face is identifying customers to purchase the farm's products. So that could be having people understand why domestic meat is more expensive, why it's more fun to be buying local yarn to knit with, or even buying young lambs, and in this case, lambs, and starting your own farm. But I think identifying people who are interested in your breed and will help selling the products to the next round of people.
And that's one of the important parts of this podcast series that we've been rolling out to the world, is we also want to create more awareness, not only of these historic breeds, but of the importance that everyday people now start becoming aware and purchasing the products, whether it's felt, whether it's slippers, whether it's bags, whether it's the meat that these animals can then also give us. And I know when we were talking offline the other day, you were telling me one of your other great challenges as a farmer for you personally is just the cost of hay. And can you share with us the difference between what you find farming in Vermont versus farming out in New Mexico?
Well, certainly areas that have more rain naturally, the hay is cheaper, and hay in hay bales in Vermont are $4.50, $5 a bale, and in New Mexico, they're $15, $18, $20 a bale because there just isn't the water. And that's something that people need to take into account when they're considering whether they want to buy livestock and whether they want a pony for their kids. Is in some places, it's much more expensive to raise these breeds than other places.
And that's important for our listeners to understand as well, because again, we've become as a society so detached from what's happening on the farm. There are these giant commercial farmers, and which we hear so little about, but then there are also the small neighborhood farmers. So again, that's just one thing. I'm just so excited to bring these conversations forward so people can go, wow, I didn't realize there was such a difference in the cost of hay in different parts of the country. And we'll expand these conversations as we go on. But now I'd like you to share a story about one of your sheep that have really touched your heart.
Well, probably over the years, my favorite sheep was a ewe named Sombrero. And I bought her as a little lamb out in northern New Mexico. Her mother's name was Kahlua, and when Sombrero was born, Kahlua was already 14 years old. And so I always name my ewes after their mothers so that I know I can visualize who their bloodlines are. I had Sombrero. She had her last baby when she was 14, and she lived to be 15, but I named every one of her babies, her ewe lambs, after a different liqueur. And sometimes I started running out of names towards the end of her life, and I'd have to go to a liquor store and look at the liqueur brands.
But what a fun way to name your animals and just kind of, you're right, build those stories within your heart and within your head to be thinking of them. That's very nice. Thank you for sharing that. And listeners, it really is up to all of us to get involved in saving these endangered animals. And one way to help grow the Navajo Churro population is to either become a breeder farmer yourself or simply buy products made from their wool. I encourage you to check out Minna's website at lanadura.com. That's spelled LanaDura.com. And as we're wrapping up today's interview, Minna, can you please share with our listeners what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Well, the best way is probably through email, and the email address is lana.dura, that's D for dog, U-R-A, .fibers@gmail.com. And you can remember this because Lana is Spanish for wool, and Dura conveys the durability and strength of wool as a fiber. So it's lanadurafibers@gmail.com. And check out the website.
Absolutely. I highly recommend that they do the same thing. I had so much fun. I got lost in there checking out all the products and reading about your mission and the stories, and just fabulous. And I love the way the name of your company has such meaning also tied to the animals themselves. So, Minna, thank you so very much for joining us today and sharing your story.
It's been absolutely been my pleasure. I love to talk about the sheep. I just love these sheep.
And that certainly comes through in the stories you've been sharing. And now, listeners, remember to head over to heritagebreeds.org to listen to additional episodes of this show. Plus, for more information and to access the directory of all the heritage breeds in the U.S., go to livestockconservancy.org. Thank you so much for your interest in these historic breeds. We look forward to seeing you in the next episode. Thank you again for joining us today at Heritage Breeds. We hope this podcast has inspired you to learn more about the animals, breeders, and people working to save them from extinction. Visit heritagebreeds.org and livestockconservancy.org to discover more and get involved. Also, be sure to pick up a copy of the Livestock Conservancy's book, An Introduction to Heritage Breeds. This is a must-have guide for raising and saving heritage breeds. Thank you again for joining us, and we'll see you in the next episode.